Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Aaron Futrell. Aaron is an Army veteran whose life took a dramatic turn following a missile strike on Al-Asad Air Base in January of 2020. Aaron's story is one of resilience and determination as he navigated the challenges of recovering from a traumatic brain injury and transitioning to civilian life after being medically retired from the Army. And despite facing adversity, Aaron has channeled his passion for fishing into a successful business venture and remains committed to giving back to his fellow veterans through volunteering opportunities, and as is evident by the fact that he's on this show right now and chatting with us today. So welcome to the show, Aaron. I'm glad to have you here.
Oh, it's good to be here. So how's it going?
Yeah, good to have you here. So I want to maybe just jump into the situation that took place on Al-Asad Air Base back in 2020. Take us back to that moment, you know, kind of what happened, where were you in relation to the missile strikes, what was going through your mind during the attack? I know, you know, for folks who have been deployed, who've been on bases that's been attacked, they probably could relate to some of the stuff that you're about to share, but, you know, what was the experience like for you?
All right, let me set the stage a little bit. Tensions were kind of running high. It was January 2020. Donald Trump just killed General Soleimani a few days earlier in a drone strike at Baghdad International. So we're kind of that was end of 19, if I remember directly. And then I'm in our talk on New Year's watching demonstrations at the U.S. Embassy, watching the drone feeds, watching, you know, them throwing Molotov cocktails at our embassy, demonstrations out front. I was working the night shift, so that was a fun way to bring in the new year. You know, there's fireworks throwing Molotov cocktails at us. So like, yeah, that's fun. So, you know, that next week, you know, I was in a medevac unit, so we're flying helicopters. So we're getting all the S2 reports for the non-military people. That's like all the intelligence reports, and they're talking about like all the stuff that's going on, like all the Iranian line militias with their anti-aircraft batteries all over Baghdad, all over other parts of the desert that we could be flying if we get a phone call to go pick up somebody. So, you know, all of our pilots are on edge. We're all on edge because, you know, the area is kind of hot right now. So leading all the way up to like January 7th, which is the day before the missile strike. And I'm working night shift. I wake up at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I go out and everybody is going crazy. Everyone's running around. And my staff sergeant, she comes out of the talk, runs past me. He's like, they just told us to pack a 4-day bag. We're getting out of here. I'm like, what? And she's like, we're scrambling the aircraft. I'm like, what's going on? And then I go in and my captain says, hey, the up crews and the birds are getting out of here, but you and the mechanics and all the ground crew are staying. So I need you to come on shift early. I'm like, okay, dude, let's go. I go get chow, come back, hop on shift, and the up crews that are abandon the aircraft, they fly out and we're there. So they told us, you know, from 11 o'clock to 03 in the morning, something's going to happen. We don't know what. We're just like, okay, sounds like fun. We don't know what's going on.
The typical intelligence, no?
Yeah. Like, we find out later that people above us knew it was going to happen, but it never really trickled down to, you know, we're the farthest unit down the totem pole. So, you know, we're detachment level. So it's, you know, how, you know, word never really trickles down. So they knew at battalion level what was going on, but it never really made it down to us until, you know, things start getting crazy. So
yeah, and so a little too late with the intelligence reports and getting that to you,
yeah, to
the folks who might need to be on alert for stuff like this.
Oh yeah,
a little bit too late, right?
They just told us get to a bunker. And I'm like, okay, we have these bunkers for like mortar attacks, you know, in our AO. So we're like, okay, we'll get to the bunker. These are our bunkers that they have, you know, because they've had a few mortar attacks. They've had one the month before where some guys fired some mortars from the desert. They ran over, you know, mm-hmm. You've been deployed. That happens, you know. Every couple months, some guy gets a little squirrely and decides to shoot a couple mortars at the base and run away.
Right.
So you go to the bunker for a few hours, hang out with your buddies, and then everything's cool. But right. So we're like, okay, is this what's going to happen again? They're going to shoot some rockets from the neighboring town and, you know, show a force and then be over. We don't know. So, but scrambling aircraft, we thought it might be a little bit bigger deal than that. So 11 o'clock, well, 2300, we get to the bunkers, we hang out there, and we just sat there forever. Like, and it's getting to be about 03 in the morning, and our captain, he decides, like, you know what, I'm going to go see if there's anything's come over Merc Chat to see if we're good to go, if nothing's happened, if they changed anything. So he goes back into the talk, and him and our maintenance officer, I think he's a W4. At the time. But anyways, it's pretty much they leave, and it's pretty much right after they leave over the loudspeaker, you hear incoming, take shelter. And it wasn't maybe 30 seconds after that, the first missile strikes. It hits 500 meters from us, from right down the flight line. Just boom. It's like the loudest sound you've ever heard in your life. Take the loudest firework, multiply it by 500. It's loud, just boom.
Sure.
And as soon as that hits, the maintenance officer comes over. He jumps on me because I'm like the first one outside the door of this bunker. And it's like one of those HESCO bunkers with like sandbags and concrete. So it's not one of those heavy duty bunkers. So he lands on me. He goes, they just hit Bravo ramp, which is where 160th, where they kept their birds right next to the FARP. But they were all their birds were gone. And as soon as he said that, the second one hits, which is 500 meters in the other direction, down on Charlie ramp. It goes boom. As soon as that one hits, it's like 5 seconds later, is the one that hits our ramp, which is Voodoo ramp, hits boom, which is 100 meters away.
Okay.
So as soon as that one hits, like the air just goes black with like dust and debris. I feel the blast wave just like smack me in the face. And it's like everything just kind of I don't black out, but everything kind of goes fuzzy for a second. And I just go, what the fuck? And then the maintenance officer's like, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I guess. I think so. I'm like, that was close.
Sure.
He's like, yeah. And as soon as we look up, we can see flames and smoke coming up over through the crack in the door of the bunker. And so as soon as we look up, that's when our captain comes over and jumps on both of us. He's like, that thing just knocked me off my feet, man. And he was like, are you all right? He's like, I don't know. I think so. And then we just sat there for like a second. We don't know. I'm not sure how long. I was like, I can look back and see the drone footage and know how long it was. But then he's like, you lose all concept of time.
Yeah. That's time doesn't exist in a normal sense in that kind of situation. It's, you have no concept of time. Everything is everything, all out of whack. Yeah.
That's the next one hits. It's boom. That one's another 500 meters over by the chow hall I think that one's by the chow hall. And then it kind of just goes silent and we're just like, contemplate what happened. So we're sitting there, we got smoke rolling through our bunker. We can see fire and we're like, did that just hit our ops? And we're just like trying to figure out what happened. while we're trying to figure it out, we start hearing rounds, like small arms rounds start popping off, just like pop, 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 pop. We're like, is there a ground assault happening? So we're kind of freaking out. And then we realize, no, that's the small arms that we had stored in our hangar that are cooking off in the fire.
Oh, okay.
We're like, oh, okay. That's better. Okay. We're not being run over. We're not being overrun right now. That's just the small arms. And then we're like, okay, they hit the hangar. They didn't hit our ops. It was a little bit farther away than we thought, but still our hangar is burning. And it was like, oh, geez. Okay. They hit our hangar. And so we figured out, okay, that's where they hit. And about that time, it's probably, we're guessing 10 to 15 minutes. We hear over the loudspeaker again, incoming, 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 take shelter, take shelter. And then another three or four missiles hit.
Wow.
And it goes for the next 3 hours. Well, I think it was actually 2 hours. So every 10 to 15 minutes, two or three, maybe four missiles would impact. And then
for that whole duration, there was basically a continuous barrage of missiles.
From 03 in the morning to 05, every 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes a 10 minutes, there'd be three to something missiles would impact the base. I think there's a total of 18 missiles hit the base. I think 11 of them detonated.
Wow.
I can't right now, but some of them, the first set of them were the closest to us. I think there was another one that detonated 500 meters, and a couple of them were detonated within like 1,000 meters, and a couple other ones between like 800 and 700 meters from us. But the one that was within 100, and then I think three were in 500 meters of my position. And to get you like the size of these missiles, you got to imagine three telephone poles like strapped together were the height of it, and they had a 1,000-pound warhead on them.
I'm familiar with the type of bunker that you're describing, the concrete and the sandbags and HESCO, kind of walls going around it. You being in one of those, if there was a direct strike on one of those, it wasn't going to do much to.
Yeah, it would have done out.
Yeah, they would have just had to dig through more stuff to find you, basically, at that point, right?
Yeah, the crater that it left on the flight line, it went through 16 inches of concrete, and then it had left a 10-foot crater, 35 feet in diameter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, it wouldn't have protected. I mean, you're protected from, shrapnel and other debris that maybe is flying through the air at that point. And that's, it's good that you had that ability. But a direct strike, you're not going to be.
But yeah, we would have been dead. I don't even know if they would have been able to find pieces of us.
Yeah.
It protected shrapnel. It may have protect us from some of the blast wave, but I don't even know from how much of that, probably some of it, but it definitely, the blast wave and the concussion went right through it because of the way it was facing. So like everybody in the bunker, we had two different bunkers that people were in, and everybody got a traumatic brain injury that was there. I'm trying to think exactly how many were in, like 24 people in the two bunkers, something like that, maybe give or take two of them, two or three.
And so you were saying that as you're in there, some of the other folks were asking, are you okay and everything? And you sort of felt like you were okay. You didn't get hit by any of the blast or anything, but you got the shockwave. When was it that you started realizing that, there was a TBI, there was something going on that wasn't quite right?
You don't realize that until it was the next morning. And it's because you got adrenaline going for the next day. And then then we got evaluated by our medics and flight surgeon. And then you took they have a whole TBI test that you take, and everybody's like, oh, maybe we're not as good as we thought we were, because that's they call that. It's the hidden injury. It's you walk around, you don't really, people look at you, you look perfectly fine, but it's like, you know, that's, you know, but you're, there's stuff not right upstairs sometimes.
It's almost like taking a, like an egg and just shaking it up real, you know, it's not going to be quite right when you crack that shell open. Right.
Oh yeah. It's like, and you know, and they said the older you are, the more a TBI affects you. Like if you're younger, something affects you as much. It's like, and the more, like if you played football earlier in life and you've had a bunch of concussions, a TBI is going to affect you even more. And of course, everybody's brain injury is a little bit different. And so, and from talking to my neurologist, it's like everybody's different. You don't know how it's going to affect every single person. So it's something they are still learning about.
Yeah. So, and it's a lot of stuff, especially with military folks like yourself who have suffered from a TBI. There's a lot of research being done trying to figure out, like, what can we do about this and how can we help reverse some of those effects, you know, if possible. But, you know, what can we do to at least make it better for someone like yourself who has suffered from something like that? And so tell us about, you know, some of the challenges that you face, you know, maybe during the recovery process, you know, and because you were medically retired from the Army because of this, you know, so it was obviously a significant impact to you. What were some of the challenges that you faced, and how did that recovery process look like for you?
Well, I started out, I ended up, they almost evacuated me to Germany because I was having migraines, but I ended up staying on and finishing out the deployment. But I, you know, ended up going into concussion protocol, which was like 3 days in a dark room with pretty much sleeping, doing absolutely nothing. They said brain rest. Pretty much they gave me some medication and I slept for like 18 hours. No phone, no books, no reading. You just laid there in the dark for 3 days. It's not fun.
No. I mean, it sounds like, hey, you're on deployment. You get to just kind of rest and relax, but it's not really relaxing. It's like you got to just be doing nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I did nothing for 3 days and it kind of made my headaches a little bit manageable. And then, so it cut my, you know, the pain in my head down from a 7 to like a 3 or 4. And then I was able to, you know, kind of limp through the rest of the deployment because, you know, as a soldier, it's like, you don't want to let your unit down. You want to. So I toughed it out for the next, you know, ended up being, we got extended a month because of COVID. So instead of a 9-month deployment, it was a 10-month deployment because our replacements were a month late because they all had to quarantine to get to Fort Hood before the, you know, so they could start their training since I was a guard unit. And then when I got to Fort Women on the way back, I had to quarantine a month before I could even go back to home to Ohio. So it ended up being almost, by the time I left home, it was almost a complete year from when I left home before I got back home to Ohio. I think it was a few days shy of a year that I was gone.
And these missile strikes, they hit this area, complete destruction for, you know, basically whatever it hit, right? You're talking about a 10-foot crater going through all that concrete and everything like that. It's, you know, definitely traumatic. Everybody involved was impacted in one way or another, whether it was, you know, from a TBI or other types of injuries. And, you know, You toughed it out. You toughed out the rest of that deployment. I gotta imagine that was not an easy thing to do, to go through a you know, that type of an attack, having those effects on you, on your brain, and then still having to continue to operate and do your job and you gotta have to almost learn how to do your job with the condition that you have. It seems like that would be a difficult thing to do. It's almost like, you know, throwing you in the deep end with, without knowing how to swim almost. Right.
Kind of. It was like, good thing. I was really good at my job. So that was part of it. So I was able to, you know, my job part didn't suffer. So that was good. So I was good at my job. So I was able to do that, but it was kind of being thrown in the deep end a little bit. So I was able, the good thing is I was on shift work. So my job was operations, and I sat in the ops tent and waited for a call for the medevac, plus doing, you know, other things, doing briefings and all that. So my job over there wasn't extremely like physically taxing. So I sat there and waited on phone calls, and COVID, and, you know, kind of was a blessing, as in it shut down everything in Iraq.
So, you know, in addition to your company that you started, which, you know, I think it's great that you started this business. It's not always easy, whether you're starting a business from scratch or buying a new business, not always easy. It's kind of a gamble. You don't really know what it is that you're getting into. And, you know, it looks like in this case, it's working out for you. So that's obviously a good thing. So in addition to that, you're also volunteering to take out other veterans to go hunting and fishing. And you do some volunteer work with that. What is the organization that you volunteer with, and how does that all work as far as, you know, getting veterans out there to go hunting and fishing?
The organization that I volunteer with is called the Fallen Outdoors. They're a national organization, and they've got teams, I think, in 32 different states. So, and the purpose of it is just to get veterans outside and out of their heads. So, and like, the outdoors is healing. So it's like just, and kind of a personal story. Like the missile strike was very trying on me, you know, being, you know, bombarded for 2 hours, and then the whole deployment afterwards, which was still pretty crazy deployment. I ended up going to Taji, which got rocketed a few times while I was there, then to Baghdad International and the BDSC with the embassy, and we were getting rocketed probably 2 or 3 times a week while I was there. So it was like pretty intense deployment. And then coming back, came back in October, and the first thing I did is I went fishing, and caught a nice bass and a real nice pike 5 minutes from my house, right out of the river. And it was like, oh, this is what I was missing. It was normal. It was like, it was something that made sense. And then the night I was able to go deer hunting, and I killed a nice 8-point buck. It was the same thing. It's like, this is right. This is the way things are supposed to be. Being outside, enjoying God's nature, and it makes sense out there. It's like, but in Iraq, things don't make sense. You know, right. People are trying to kill you. You know, people are dying, and it's not, things aren't right over there. But back here in nature, things make sense. So, and every time I go in the outdoors, I go hunting, I go fishing. It's good for the soul, and it's good for healing, and it helps me. So I do that for other veterans. So not only to help myself, but help them. So I do what I can. So if I'm going fishing and I have time to take somebody with me, I try and take somebody with me. And if I'm able to set up a hunting trip, sometimes those are a little bit more difficult to coordinate. I'll try and get somebody to go, you know, go rabbit hunting, go squirrel hunting, go deer hunting, just coordinate to go spend time in the outdoors with somebody. And that's what the organization does. It's like, if you can go take somebody out in the woods, go take somebody out in the river, go take somebody out on the lake, and just spend time with them, get them from sitting in their apartment, sitting in their house, and just being, from getting them out of here and outside, it can do a lot for them, because it does a lot for me. So
yeah,
that's what the organization does. And they try and get you to,
yeah, you know,
go ahead.
Oh yeah. So I had a guest on real early when I started this podcast, probably the first maybe dozen or two dozen episodes, somewhere around there. And he was talking about how the outdoors is his therapy. It's his church. It's his, it's his, just his gym. It's his place where he just goes and gets revived. Right. And that sounds like what you're talking about too, right?
Definitely. It's like, I try and get out there as much as possible. And even if it's not hunting or fishing, you're just going out there and going for a walk, walking through the woods. I have a bunch of trails in the town where I live in, and just going and walking down them, you know, by the trees down by, you know, I have a river that runs right through our town. Just go walking by the river. It helps. It's just getting a little bit of fresh air, a little bit of sun. And it's just, I think the outdoors makes a little bit more sense. And it just, it revitalizes you. And just, and I think a lot of the reasons veterans end up, you know, taking their own lives is because they spend up too much time locked in their house, locked in their rooms, thinking about things. And if they just got out a little bit more, I think they would feel a little bit better and just get up and walk around. Well, and just do something. Yeah,
I think there's something powerful about movement and physical activity. And I'm not talking about you got to go, you know, bench press 1,000 pounds or anything stupid like that. Like go, just doing something with your body physically. And it could be, you know, gardening, it could be, painting, or it could be something that you're using your mind in a way that's different than like what you were saying, when you're just kind of stuck in your home and your mind starts wandering and you start thinking all these different things, even just going out for a walk, you know, as you're walking, you're looking at different things that are around, the area that you're in. If you're walking, you know, in your neighborhood, you're looking, you know, for, you know, maybe traffic as cars are going around a street that you might be crossing, and you got to pay attention to that. Or you're looking at out for, you know, your neighbors to say hey to them as you're walking by. If you're out in the woods, you're looking around, you know, to see where's the next safe space to, you know, put your foot as you're walking on maybe a rocky trail or something like that. And your mind isn't really thinking of all those other things because you got other stuff to worry about when you're out doing that kind of stuff. And it seems like it's helpful from what I've heard, you know, obviously talking to you, but also talking to other people, it's helpful to kind of just switch how your mind is thinking, right?
Oh yeah. It's like, and I think even just using your body, it's like using your muscles and getting blood flowing through your body is good for your brain. So, you know, and my brain needs all the help it can get these days.
You know, it's just a, you know, a way to change the way you're doing things. When you're in a routine and you're stuck in a rut and you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you're getting the same results that you've always gotten, it's like, well, okay, you got to go change something and go do something different. Right. And so maybe you haven't gotten out and moved around, or you haven't gone outside and done anything physical outside. Well, maybe give that a shot. Like, get off your ass, go outside, you know, go for a walk, you know, something simple like that. Or, you know, hook up with someone like you who could take the person out fishing or hunting or, you know, who knows, bike riding or something, anything. Just go and do those types of things, and get out and change the environment that you're in. And hopefully that'll turn things around, or at least, you know, help you start moving towards the right direction.
Yeah.
You know,
right now there are so many veterans organizations out there trying to do something, and you can find a veterans organization for just about anything right now. There's, I know, like there's some of my friends do motor that are like, there's combat and motorcycle. I don't ride a bike, but I know friends that ride bikes to go ride with motorcycles. There's guns that fix cars. There's probably veterans,
right,
you know, gardening association or whatever. I don't know. You can probably find a veterans group for everything, because if there's a veteran that likes to do something, he started an organization that promotes it. It seems like, you know, there's probably a veterans knitting club.
You're absolutely right.
You know,
you're absolutely right. I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
You know, there's veterans, all sorts of things. I mean, from, yeah, right. You know, all walks of life, all different, you know, types of things. You kind of, you know, joked, like, I bet you there's a veterans gardening club. And there is. I had him on the show a couple of years ago. And so it's like that kind of stuff exists. You know, and maybe, you know what, maybe they're focused in a certain area of the country, maybe because that's where they got started and they're not big enough yet to expand to other areas of the country. But hey, guess what? If that's a thing that you're into, mm-hmm. there's probably other veterans in your area that's into it too.
Oh yeah.
Why don't you start it? Like, why don't you just, and it doesn't have to be like a formal organization or anything. It's just like, hey, a bunch of people, let's meet up, go create a Facebook group or something and
oh, yeah.
and have those people join and say, hey, we're meeting up at, you know, this place and we're going to do whatever. We're going to be, you know, knitting or something. Who knows? Oh, like yeah. whatever the thing is, just find your people.
Oh yeah. And there's plenty of veterans out there that, you know, so they're people that understand you, understand what you've been through and people that you can talk.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
that's right.
My father-in-law is a Vietnam veteran. I think he talks more to me about the Vietnam War than he's ever talked to his daughter, nor he's talked to his son.
Yeah,
because because he knows I get it a little bit, even though, you know, he was a Vietnam grunt who's seen way crazier stuff than I have, but he at least knows that hey, I understand a little bit. Yeah, he's seen some crazy stuff, so.
Well, and I got to imagine, though, he's not taking your experience that we just talked about a little bit earlier. He's not taking that for granted either, because
no.
that was you seeing some shit, too. So
oh, yeah.
Like he gets it, you know.
Oh, yeah. So it's like it's the same thing. He's like there's a little bit of brotherhood there that, you know, it's like
sure.
we understand each other and we can talk a little bit about things that other people don't get. It's like, I know.
Yeah, right.
And so it's good to be able to talk about. It's like, you know, I try and talk to my wife about some things, but I know there's some things that are difficult for me to talk to her with that I can go down the street to the local VFW and talk to somebody I've never met about things that it's hard to talk to, you know, somebody that you're close to. Just because
sure.
it feels, yeah. you know, they get it.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, a lot of times I think some guys, they don't want to burden their families with
mm-hmm.
the darkness that they've seen. You know, they feel like they might be a burden. They're not, because I'm sure, you know, their loved ones are,
oh, yeah.
You know, ready, willing, able to talk to them about this type of stuff. And they feel that way. But they feel like, hey, you know what? This guy's also been through this. I can talk to this person a little bit easier. Hey, you know, if that's what you need, go find your people,
mm-hmm.
you know, go find. And if those people are not already in a group, like a, you know, an organization that already exists, figure it out, get those people together. I guarantee you there's people who are into some similar things that you're into, like, just like with you, with, you know, hunting and fishing and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. I guarantee there's folks in your area that you can find that would not mind getting together with other like-minded people to have those types of conversations and enjoy each other's company. So, you know, get out there, find them, you know, I think that's the takeaway from all of this is find
oh, yeah.
your people, and do those activities that help you help each other really. Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, before we wrap this episode up, I want to do a segment. I like to introduce a little bit of humor in the episodes and kind of make some people laugh. I got a segment I like to call it, Is It Service Connected? And it's sort of like America's Funniest Home Videos, military edition. And we watch kind of a funny video of a service member doing something kind of stupid. And sometimes they slip, they fall, they get a little mildly hurt. They're nothing too major. We're not looking at, you know, explosions and rockets going off and all that kind of stuff, but we're just looking at, you know, trying to have a little bit of fun and yeah, we can laugh at each other and it's all good. So let me pull up this video here so that you can see it. And we'll take a look at this. So right now for the audio only listeners, it looks like we got, you know, kind of an obstacle course. We got a couple soldiers, water underneath, and they're standing on a really wet log, which is probably not the the best idea, but hey, that's where they're at. So let's see what happens when we start this video. Okay, so we got a couple soldiers. They're, one of them is not quite sure. Yeah, she didn't even attempt to grab the bar. And then the other one that we're looking at, she's ready to go. She's going to take this leap, grabbing this bar, grabs it, and then flat on her back in the water. That actually looked pretty rough, the way she landed. That was from a pretty decent height, because she was grabbing on and her feet kept going, and she was almost parallel with those bars, and then she came straight down. That was maybe a 8 foot drop or so. That could cause some damage, I would think.
Oh, yeah, and she was only like 4 foot three.
I know. Yeah, she was pretty short, and you know, luckily she was able.
I give props for trying, though. She had some spunk.
Yeah, I mean, and she got the lift off of that log, which probably wouldn't be all that easy. I mean, I'm like 6'1", so I might just be able to reach out and grab the bar, and it would be pretty easy for me to grab it. But for someone like that, she was pretty short, and that she had to jump pretty high.
Yeah, she's like, I'm doing this. She's like, we all served with those people that like thought they were taller than they were.
But you know what? Hell, like you said, I'll give her credit for just trying, because the other person to the right of the screen, standing there thinking about it and then just kind of hopped down. It was like, nah, I don't think I'm going to make this. Which she probably was right.
I know. But I would say that's definitely service connected from the VA.
Yeah. I mean, there got to be some back or neck injuries, or maybe even she hit her head. There might be a TBI going on in there too. Who knows?
Yeah.
That water looked pretty filthy too. So, get a mouthful of that. That probably wasn't the best idea either. Yeah. So who knows?
Her chiropractor's thankful for her, because she's probably be visiting him quite a bit. But yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Nope. No.
Oh. Well, Aaron, thank you again for taking the time to join us. I really do appreciate it. You coming on and sharing your story and sharing it with the other folks who might be going through something similar. You know, they've got service connected related injuries, and they're trying to figure out how to navigate life after these traumatic events. So thank you for coming on, sharing your story and giving, setting an example and giving a little bit of hope to those who might feel kind of lost and hopeless. So thank you again.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.